And now let's move on to The Sixth Sense, Napoleon Hill's next topic. And Eric.
Thank you, Chris. This is a chapter which I had to read about three times in order to kind of derive what I thought the true meaning of this chapter was, because The Sixth Sense is very mysterious. He calls it the doorway to the Temple of Wisdom. Basically, after reading this, and I'm going to kind of compose this this presentation and try to prove a point that I think is made here. I think of The Sixth Sense as kind of the mastermind principle of the mind, and I think as you read this, that Napoleon's examples will make this point for you. And I'm going to read a couple different excerpts from the book and try to make this point. But first off, let's define it and let you know in the beginning. And I think Napoleon's definition and understanding of this principle kind of mutates as he goes through this chapter. But let's start off in the beginning, where he says that the sixth sense is probably is the medium of contact between the finite mind of man and infinite intelligence. And for this reason, it is a mixture of both the mental and the spiritual. It is believed to be the point at which the mind of man contacts the universal mind. So in the beginning, he's talking about it as, you know, whether that infinite knowledge be something like God or something it's really unknown but greater than oneself, which exists in nature. That's kind of how he initially defines it in the beginning. But notice that he said the sixth sense probably is. So he's admitting right off the bat that there's an uncertainty in his mind as to how he actually feels about this. And I think you're going to see that as you move through this chapter, that uncertainty kind of changes. Now, here's another interesting point about the uncertainty. He says that the author is not a believer in nor an advocate of miracles for the reason that he has enough knowledge of nature to understand that nature never deviates from her established laws. So now he's basically saying that he doesn't believe that this is some outside being interacting, but that it's actually a law in nature that creates it and is empowered over the sixth sense. But he moves on to say the sixth sense comes as near to being a miracle as anything I have ever experienced, and it appears so only because I do not understand the methods by which this principle is operated. So the way I read that is that Napoleon is saying that the sixth sense exists in nature but is simply working on an undiscovered mysterious law that, you know, we haven't figured out yet. And I think that's kind of him giving this dialogue is kind of letting you know that, hey, he really doesn't know what it is yet, but he just knows that it works and that it's something that's greater than him. Now let's talk about his experience, because I think this is where it got kind of weird for me. And I only say weird because I don't understand it until I read a few times and then could kind of figure out what it was. Basically, he says that the author has this knowledge because he's experienced with it and has experienced it. And as you read this, you're going to find his experience with this. And I thought it was kind of bizarre at first, but he sets up actually a council in his own mind. Invisible counselors is what he calls them. And he starts off with actually nine counselors: Emerson, Paine, Edison, Darwin, Lincoln, Burbank, Napoleon, Ford, and Carnegie, I believe, were his first nine counselors. Now think about this in your mind as to how he's doing this. What he's done is he's studied these guys, and this is where I'm taking this and where I think it goes. He studied these guys with great length, and he later in the book he tells you that, and he's noticed their strengths and their character traits that make them who they are and make them powerful in his mind. So what he's doing, and he says that he set this council up initially to rebuild his own character, is basically what he says. So that's his reason for starting this. But he studied these guys at great length. And my suggestion to you as to what he's doing here, and the reason I call it the reason I wanted to title this, if you could change the title here, the reason I think you should change it to The Sixth Sense is the Mastermind Principle of the Mind, is because what he's done is actually studied these guys and then put them in almost his own little mastermind roundtable, if you will, where he actually has conversations with these gentlemen, putting himself in their shoes, basically. Now, keep in mind that this is all in his imagination. But what happens is, and what I think that this actually forces him to do, is to actually take on the persona of somebody else and actually look at the world and his problems through other people's eyes and how he thinks somebody would somebody else would actually solve that problem. It gives him a different perspective. It also gives him several things, such as motivation and some other things as well, that keep him going. And in the chapter, he actually breaks down each one of the people in his little group and tells you why he chose them and what strengths they bring to the mastermind group. And if you'll remember, when he was talking about setting up a mastermind group, he said that you should actually pick people that have a strength that you don't have, put them into this thing so they all have purpose. He's setting up a mastermind group of his own with these individuals in his mind based on the strengths that he thinks that they possess, which he does not and wishes to internalize and then possess. So in all reality, if you think back to the mastermind principle, which I think Ken Peterson presented a few principles back, Ken was saying that, hey, one of the best ways to mastermind is to go out and study other people, read their books, and then apply those principles to your own business, and that's one of the easiest masterminds to actually attain because all this information already exists. That's exactly what Napoleon Hill is doing in this chapter, in my mind. He's not tapping into some infinite knowledge, and I'm sure a lot of people will disagree with me here. I think what he's doing is tapping into knowledge that exists and gaining additional perspective on life through other people's eyes by looking at his problems in different angles and with different strengths that he otherwise wouldn't possess, and actually drawing from their information. And I think he becomes much more powerful because of that. And there's a defining moment in the book where he actually is addressed by Lincoln himself. You know, and he doesn't know if it's a dream or not, because eventually his mind kind of allows him to embellish and feel as if these meetings are real. And gets to the point where Lincoln comes to him, and I think if you were Napoleon at this point, you'd probably... I think he was in a point in his life where he might have even thought about giving up on this project. And Lincoln addresses him and actually brings him back in and gives him more definite purpose and motivates him. And I think in his mind, Lincoln was a very steadfast, trustworthy, push-forward kind of guy, which was kind of his motivator and what kept him involved and kept him moving towards his doing his life's work. And Lincoln actually talks to him as if he's a real person almost. And in his mind he is. So what I think this also does, and this is something that is kind of a little bit more loose, but I think that he's also making or getting some internal believability, because where he can't come up with these ideas and believe them himself, because he doesn't really believe he has those character traits himself, he believes that these other people are telling them, and it makes it easier for his subconscious mind to actually internalize that and to latch onto it. So there's a couple things happening here, and let me get through... Basically, I think the three things that are happening most effectively through his application of this principle are that he's gaining a new perspective, that he's motivating himself, and he's making discoveries that he otherwise wouldn't have made. And I think one big point here that you really need to focus on is that at one point, right after his encounter with Lincoln, he goes on to increase his roundtable to up to 50 members, I believe. And the way I read that is he went out and studied some more individuals and internalized their traits. And really what this is forcing him to do is actually go out and study other people that are doing well for themselves based on their own personal traits and really internalizing those things and going out there and learning. So it's forcing him to learn something. And I think that perspective is truly, that he derives from that, is truly what gives him the power and makes this thing all really work. So I looked at it at first thinking that I was looking at a guy or reading about a guy that was talking to himself and having these weird meetings with himself. But in all reality, what he's doing is he found a nice way to interact with his subconscious mind by studying other people and then bringing their traits into his own mind and conducting these little meetings where he could more easily communicate with his subconscious. And that's kind of what I got out of this whole thing. It was kind of a strange, bizarre chapter. Definitely, I think it's one of the reasons that he makes it the last chapter and the last principle. Towards the end of the book, is simply because you have to be open to these other ideas, which kind of force you to learn and force you to start influencing your subconscious mind in order to really apply this principle. And that's where I'm going to leave it. I think that it's definitely something that that left me sitting there wondering after I read it, and definitely something I feel you can get a lot out of reading this chapter and following a lot of the same principles. Just go out there, study other people that you want to follow in their footsteps, and then try to do what they do. And if it takes having an imaginary meeting, have an imaginary meeting if it gets you where you want to go in life. That's where I'm at. Thanks, guys.
Hey, that's great. I think your perspective is really good. I think he did what many people would call now modeling. is what he was doing by studying the lives of these successful people. And then he was asking good questions. He was asking the questions that probably he thought they would ask. How would this gentleman approach this problem, knowing what I know about him? And I think that it was a great. Now there are a lot of people who support modeling people who are successful to be more successful. And we all know that asking good questions gives good answers. And so he was forcing himself to look outside the box, which I hate that expression, but he was forcing himself to look outside the box from the position of all these people who succeeded. But I think what you have to keep in mind is he studied those people first, so he knew their point of view and their history. And I think that was the key to making it work for him.
You know, we have a phrase we like to say around our office. You know, sometimes you can't see the forest through the trees. The saying that, you know, I think your own perspective sometimes is flawed because it's your own perspective and because you've got your own, the principle we talked about already, the brain gets in the way, and sometimes you've got all these own preconceived notions about something, or you've got your own ideas, and maybe they're not bad ideas, but I think that sometimes if you get out of your own brain and into somebody else's, you know, talking about studying other people, you have to know their positions, know where they stand on the issues and where they are and how they would behave, and then like Eric said, you know, you have a conversation with them in your head. You know, you're interacting with them. You're finding out how they feel about things. And maybe these are people that you know but don't have experience. You know, you don't talk to them because you can't. But maybe it's also people that you do know. It's a mastermind group, people that you can bounce ideas off. But if you can get inside their head and you've got their experience, then sometimes I think that you can have fresh eyes on it. You can have that approach of being able to benefit from more than just your own experience and your own sort of being right there in the situation.
Absolutely, and I believe that's really Napoleon Hill in this chapter illustrating the process that he talks about. I mean, it's no secret. Think and grow rich. And so Napoleon Hill in The Sixth Sense is talking like with these invisible counselors. That's obviously a thinking process. He did not actually meet Lincoln. You know, Burbank was not actually in the room. And so he's using his mind, his brain, in an area to accomplish something. And he's saying now, when he gets the guidance, which is the sixth sense, he calls it the receptive message from the creative intelligence, he's saying that, which is also, by the way, a thinking thing, is guiding him and helping him create the reality that he wants to create. Now, any psychologist that deals with dreams will tell you that images is the way the mind thinks, the five senses. But Napoleon here is saying, hey, we go beyond the five senses. We're talking about the ephemeral. We're talking about thinking. But, you know, check this out. Anybody, and this probably happened to everybody. I know it happened to me recently. Anybody can corroborate this. The other day I woke up in the middle of a dream, and in this dream, I was hiking on a mountain in Alaska, and the snow was whirling away, and I was freezing my buns off, and when I woke up, all I had on was underwear, and the cover had fallen on the floor, and the fan was blowing on me, and I was freezing my buns off in real life, you know? But my brain didn't say, the cover's off. My brain said, you're hiking in Alaska, and you're freezing. But the message was the same. My brain, this ephemeral part, the receptor part, the message I was getting was saying, you are cold. You got to do something. Brought it in other images. And that's how these invisible counselors, which Napoleon says after this one event, I didn't know if it was real, if I had dreamed it or imagined it, I thought it, but what? But the effect was the same, because in this thought world, not in the real sense world, he had received impressions that he could then coordinate in his objectives and goals.
Ted, I think one more point I wanted to make here that I left out of my presentation that I think is kind of that realization. And he actually admits, hey, these guys aren't real. He says, why the members of my cabinet may be purely fictional and the meetings exist only in my own imagination, they have led me into glorious paths of adventure, rekindled an appreciation of true greatness, encouraged creative endeavor, and emboldened an expression of honest thought. So I think he is really utilizing them as just a simple tool. I mean, it's
And there's nothing simple, I guess, about the method in which he did it. It was kind of very creative in its own right. But that he actually it just states that these are just I'm imagining these characters. But I think that's a great point to realize that he never knew these guys. He only met one of the guys that he's actually in his first nine, and I believe that was Edison, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, he knew Edison, of course.
Yeah, he met Edison, and when he addressed Edison, I thought that was kind of funny, because can you imagine this guy coming up to Edison and saying, hey, I had a conversation with you in my imagination the other night. And, Edison, I think Edison probably just kind of laughed and said, oh, man, that was the real deal. I was actually there. Maybe just playing with him in a way, but, and he didn't see it that way. That was kind of the thought that came to me, and I kind of chuckled to myself. But, the fact that he's actually internalizing a lot of these character traits and furthering his own life based on his inspiration and what he gets from other people by studying them.
Well, here's a practical tip, though, that anyone can use. It's one thing to imagine you're with people who are gone, but you can learn a lot from people that are here. And, my interaction with successful people, one thing I've seen over and over again, most successful people are readers. And one thing they read over and over is autobiographies of successful people. Because in those autobiographies are all the different methods that a successful person used to be successful. Plus, there's no life that doesn't have challenges. There's no life that doesn't have setbacks, personal defeats. So you learn, as you read these books of these great successful people, what they did to overcome failure and turn it into success. So it's one thing to have an imaginary mastermind group, and that may work for some, but I think if we just concentrate more and more on reading and read a lot of great autobiographies of people that we admire, that's also a great way to get the knowledge that we need.
I was going to say, too, I wanted to add here that reading and studying the lives of successful people, I think one thing Napoleon was saying, is a way to assimilate them into your own mind so that they become part of your internal mastermind group, much in the same way as that all very well-known Christians saying, what would Jesus do? The point is that you study the lives of the successful people to study and to assimilate into you how they dealt with what life will throw at them and thus at you, and become so familiar with that by studying how they did it that you have this mastermind group within you to turn to as you face the challenges you obviously, without question and without avoidance, will face as you move towards success.
The whole topic of the sixth sense is something that will probably most of you know. I know all the roundtable members know, and a lot of the people listening, that I've actually, for 20 years performed as a magician. In the last half of those 20 years, I did a mind reading show, and so it was really interesting. Actually, it was strictly a show. It was illusion. But there was also some psychology in there and also some intuition. And I would go out there armed with the illusion part, so I know I'm going to have a successful show and be able to entertain people. And in many cases, and this was part of the intent, but not to mislead people, but just like when you watch wrestling, nobody comes out and announces, hey, this is all fake. You just should know that. But part of
Wait
the
a minute.
Is,
You're saying wrestling is fake?
I hate to break that to you. Alan, I know. We'll have to talk later.
Okay.
So really, it's that suspension of disbelief and the for entertainment value while I was doing it. But what I had is I would have people coming up to me all the time after a show, and this meant that I did my job, and say, wow, when did you get this gift of being psychic and so on? And, I just had to be diplomatic and not let them down. Now, whereas you go to some other people who go on TV, there's one in particular who has a show where he's talking to the dead, all that kind of stuff. And that's bunk. That's my opinion, but it's a very qualified opinion. I guess the thing here is the sixth sense. You can look at it and try to evaluate it. Well, what is it? Is it real? Is this guy real? Is that real? Is it real within me? But it boils down to this whole mastermind principle is one great example. Who cares? If something works for you, do it. And if it can release that small percentage in the mind that's going to work, do some mysterious stuff for you and help you, and you can have a mastermind group that you don't really know, and they may not be really alive, but you know enough through reading about them or hearing about them that you can, you know, let your imagination go wild, then go for it.
That's a great point. We have a couple minutes left on this subject. If anybody else has any last words.
Yeah, I wanted to make one more point here, and I had it written down here, and now I'm having a hard time finding it. But let's see here. I've written this stuff down or told very many people about this, and he comes out and actually states it. And I think that's one of the things that everybody here on the, you know, listening to this tape or reading this book has to really learn. And I think that you just made a great point, Randy, when you said, hey, if it works, do it. And hey, if it works, teach other people how to do it as well. And I think that's one of the things that this whole book consists of, is just, hey, one, you know, kind of eccentric guy, or very eccentric guy, depending on how you look at it, had all these different techniques that he was utilizing in his own life in order to communicate effectively with his subconscious mind, or in order to effectively think and grow rich. You know, you can model a lot of the ways that he actually communicates with his own subconscious mind and apply some of those techniques. But hey, maybe it can be as simple as what Russ just said. Read the autobiographies and then think about those individuals when you're making decisions. You don't have to have an internal council meeting. I mean, there's other ways people deal with this stuff. But definitely educate yourself. I think that was really the point of this whole chapter that I got out of it, was just go out there and learn what other people have done so that you don't make the same mistakes in history, that there's lessons out there that you can learn from. I mean, he followed great leaders in history and applied that to himself so he didn't have to make those same mistakes.
Yeah, and I believe that he's saying with that effort to, you know, immerse himself in these subjects with these personalities and these traits, he's doing it for the purpose of receiving messages from his subconscious mind, which he's calling it the sixth sense, but it's pretty well established that whatever we immerse ourselves into, we will get ideas about later on as time goes by. And so he's just talking about a conscious method of being open to the messages of the subconscious mind.
Well, that's a great place to wrap up this subject, the sixth sense. Thanks, Eric. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Okay, now as we close out this program, we're going to have some fun here. Napoleon Hill, in his preface, referred to the one definitive answer, the one secret, and in a couple different places here in his preface, I'll just read them. In one part, he says, "The secret to which I refer has been mentioned no fewer than 100 times throughout this book. It has not been directly named, for it seems to work more successfully when it is merely uncovered and left in sight, where those who are ready and searching for it may pick it up." And then a couple pages later, he goes on to say, "Somewhere as you read, the secret to which I refer will jump from the page and stand boldly before you. If you are ready for it, when it appears, you will recognize it." So think about that, over 100 times. And what we're going to do here is we're going to have some fun as we close this program out. And we're just going to go through the group, and everybody just take a couple of minutes to share what you believe to you the one definitive answer, the one secret that he's referring to here is. So let's start with Don Bice.
Okay, I'll be happy to. Well, I'm going to disappoint you. Nothing jumped at me. I guess I'm not ready for it because it just didn't happen. To me, the book has said that the most powerful, one of the most powerful forces on earth is the ability of a thought that is held with coupled with strong belief, its ability to change and direct our lives. I believe that's true, but I believed that before I started. So this affirmed that belief, but I didn't see a secret message. I didn't see a principle that I was ripe for that should jump out at me. And so I may be one of those, even at my age, that I still have, just proves I still have a lot of learning to do. But I believe that the key thought in the book for me is the power of thought to change and direct our lives. And this confirmed that for me.
Well, Don, I have to say that that's probably as close to finding the secret as I feel, but I'll carry on and go a little more in depth. The secret I found from this, and it's so important because so many people feel so trapped in their lives, and so you know, it's like life is controlling you, or the you controlling your life. The secret I got out of this, and I hope so many who read it do, you don't have to be what you are now. And maybe it's because I'm a computer guy, but the way I picked this up and the way I visualize this is that the human brain is really a computer. It's programmed from the day you're born, and it's responsible for what you are today. Just as we were discussing in an earlier principle when we were talking about it, there are so much of the brain is so untapped, we don't even know what it's for necessarily, but it's part of the human machine. And I believe that it's a part of the human machine that runs programming that, believe it or not, dictates who you will be or who you are. But you can, through the applications of the principles in this book, reprogram your brain. That's the secret I see. Each chapter, each principle is actually, I visualize it as programming instructions. And the secret is the power of those instructions to change that program in your brain and your life, to become and make of your life anything that you truly want. And it's the truly want that's so important. But all of the principles, if you look at them, are like, in my mind, I see it as, it's like the programming code, the actual language you can use to reprogram your brain, which will redirect your life to where you truly want it to be. Eric?
Okay. Actually, I was one of those guys that read it, and actually, I guess I bought into the hype in the beginning and was reading for it the whole time, so maybe that's what made it really come out and slap me in the face. But I think Napoleon is a great example of this, actually, and I'll tell you what I mean. My thought on this whole thing is definite purpose is the answer. And I think desire, I mean, there's a point in here where he says, the starting point of all achievement is desire. Now, what makes you truly able to desire and really want something is a definite purpose. You have to actually know what you want in order to have desire. So you've, in my opinion, if you don't know what you want, if you don't know what's really going to make you happy, and I think that's kind of how you define it. You have to figure out what you truly want and where you want your life to end up in order to make you happy. I think Napoleon Hill's whole purpose, and in the Sixth Sense chapter, Lincoln actually helps him discover this. He tells him what his purpose is, and it's to bring this philosophy, his whole Think and Grow Rich philosophy, to the world. And, you know, he got this philosophy and his definite purpose way back when he had his initial meeting with Carnegie. So he carried this whole life, his whole life's work is in this book, in all reality. Everything he did, that was his definite purpose. But wealth is in the eye of the beholder, I really think. So Think and Grow Rich may be Think and Grow Grandchildren, if that's what makes you happy. But you should center on what you really want to focus on, and this whole thing needs some sort of fuel to run. You need an idea, a definite purpose to make all these different things happen and to motivate you through this whole thing. And upon the completion, you achieve true happiness, and I think that's the whole point of this. So my thing that popped out at me is, hey, if you want to achieve something, if you want to have something to talk to your subconscious mind about, if you want all these principles to work, you got to know what you want. And that's where your definite purpose comes in. Thank you very much. And I don't know who I'm turning it over to, but I'm turning it over.
It's Randy. I'll take
all right,
it.
Randy. Thank you.
Okay. You know, on page 131, and I imagine that would vary on different versions of this book. But what I'm looking at, I think it says it right here. It says, strange and paradoxical as it may seem, the secret is not a secret. Nature herself advertises it in the earth on which we live, the stars, the planets suspended within our view, in the elements above us and around us, in every blade of grass and every form of life within our vision. Nature advertises the secret in the terms of biology, in the conversion of a tiny cell so small that it may be lost on the point of a pin into the human being now reading this line. The conversion of desire, and this here it is, the conversion of desire into its physical equivalent is certainly no more miraculous. So coming back to, you know, we become what we think about, and in previous conversations that we've had in different areas, it's come up over and over again, that our thoughts and thoughts act, not can, but they do manifest into physical reality. That, and what William James said, a person can change their life by changing their attitude of mind. And what I and many of us have talked about before, faith, that's come up a lot. And I guess the thing is, the secret is so obvious and it's so in front of us that it isn't a secret, yet it's just too obvious for us to see. And it boils down to what I just said, which is, you know, having faith and believing that our thoughts are real. Because our thoughts are real. And if you can accept that and also accept that our thoughts are not necessarily completely controlled by our conscious mind, and they certainly aren't, then we can allow, through faith, a greater power to guide us. And that brings, and I think that touches on every chapter that we've discussed, that there's sort of more to it than what we can see. So have that belief, let things happen, be willing to let go of some of your current beliefs and accept others. And again, it keeps coming back to faith. So that's what I think the secret is, that it really isn't a secret, that it's, you know, just like it says here, that it's just so obvious that it's too obvious, so we overlook it because it's right in front of us, and that's quite often the case in life in general. And the way to take this opportunity to take advantage of this quote unquote secret is to be willing to accept what may not at first seem exactly within your comfort zone. At first may seem, you know, logical to you, release to a higher being, and let the rest of that 90% or so of your mind do some work for you. And I'll turn that one over now to Ted.
All right. Thank you there very much, Randy. And I'll tell you what, there is definitely a secret. I mean, in the author's preface, Napoleon Hill refers to it using the exact word secret 31 times. He uses the word formula, which may be giving you a hint about what the secret is, 10 times, even calling it a magic formula. Throughout the book, he talks about awesome power and intangible powers. Here's the problem, though, and it's already been brought up. It's a secret that's hidden in plain sight. There's another great philosopher that used to say, oh, you who have eyes but cannot see, you have ears and cannot hear. It's the same thing here. It's because our programming, which that word has come up to, our biases, our selective perception doesn't allow us to see the secret. Yeah, I'm reminded of Edgar Allan Poe's great story, The Purloined Letter. And the Paris detectives, they bust into this guy's apartment when he's not there, of course. So they come in, there's like 8 or 10 of them, and they're poking needles through his sofas, and they're looking in the shower curtains, and they're opening up every doggone book looking for this purloined letter, which is a stolen letter. All the time, the guy had pegged it to his bulletin board, and they couldn't see the obvious. So that's basically what that is. Now, I am not going to divulge that secret, because I believe that would frustrate the very purpose and design of the book, because it works better when the person does discover it on their own. So I might just give a few pieces of information that maybe people you'll be able to discover it, and it'll jump out to you. Number one thing is that there is a formula. There is a formula that, therefore, anybody can learn to duplicate the route to riches. And it can be applied for predictable results. That's what we're talking about. Also, in this secret, once you acquire this secret, in the mere acquisition of it, because it's obviously it's hidden in plain sight, it's, seeing it is not enough. Grasping it is where the real secret is. In that, you've got the power. Napoleon, at one point in this chapter, says, I've never known anyone who was inspired to use the secret who didn't achieve noteworthy success in their calling, i.e., anybody who uses this secret has the power. They achieve noteworthy success. And then he follows that with his next sentence as a contrasting thing. I have never known any one person to distinguish himself or accumulate riches of any consequence without possession of the secret. So in other words, he's saying there's two things. Anybody I've ever seen who acquired this, they've been using the secret. And also, anybody who's used the secret has acquired these riches. So basically, one point then I'd just like to leave on that you think about and help you recognize the secret when it stands and opens up before you is that all achievement, all earned riches have their beginning in an idea. Jeff Gardner.
Great. Thank you very much, Ted. Well, I really like The Hidden Secret because I believe personally that it is in the title. Think and Grow Rich. I think the greatest thing about Napoleon Hill was the fact that he really wanted to hide this in plain sight. wanted to put it right in front of your eyes multiple times over and over again, even as far as putting it in the title, because really, truly, it is about thinking. You know, most of the information in the book is about programming your mind in the right way to develop your mind so that you have the ability to think and grow rich. And that's, I think, one of the most amazing things about this book is that really you have to tap into the power of your mind and harness the power of your mind. Because if you really think about it, everything in your life, virtually everything in your life, has been manifested through your own thought. Your job, your relationship, your goals, your feelings. These things are all manifested first and foremost through your thoughts. Now, if your thoughts are jumbled, if you don't focus on them, if you let them go down the path on remote control, if you let them be influenced by the news, by the bad news, by things going around you, by people around you, then you don't have any of that control. And in many cases, your thoughts are going to send you down a negative path or down a path you don't know where it leads. You focus, especially by taking the information out of Napoleon Hill's book, if you focus on harnessing the power of your mind, you have the real, true ability to change your direction in life and get to where you want to go. There was talk before about riches as different things to different people, and I believe that's exactly right. It may not be wealth to you. It may be a full relationship, a happy relationship, maybe more happiness in your life. It may be more things in your life. It can be a lot of different things, but before you get those things, you have to manifest in your head the thoughts to get to those places. And so I think that's so powerful in this book, how it tells you how you can program your mind to generate those things. Because if you look around you right now, wherever you are, virtually everything around you was manifested by a thought. You know, people had to think about cars and buildings and how to build things and our society. All was developed through thought. It's so powerful. And it's so simple that most people bypass it and they think, now I want a 48 tape set and 23 binders and I'm going to go through 84 exercises and that's going to be it because it's so difficult. It doesn't have to be difficult. Some of the best things in the world, the most effective things in the world are incredibly simple. It's a simple idea, but very powerful. It can move mountains and that's what I believe the secret is. So now I'll throw it over to Russ von Holscher.
Well, Jeff, you know, I agree that Think and Grow Rich, the title, tells us part of the secret. And until just recently, I thought the overriding secret was that thoughts were the most important thing. And they probably are. I don't think we have to say there's just one sole secret. The whole book is based on Think and Grow Rich. However, I really think a big part of the secret now is what Eric said, definiteness of purpose. And the reason I say that is you can have all kinds of thoughts on reprogramming your mind. You can have faith. You can have desire, specialized knowledge. You can have a plan. But if you don't have a purpose, if you're not sure what you want to accomplish, I don't think you can accomplish it. And there's a little tip in the book that kind of swayed me to this way of thinking. He talks about Henry Ford as a person who seemed to be devoid of so many of the success traits that Napoleon talks about in Think and Grow Rich. But he says, Ford, one of the great men of all time, the man that put the world on wheels, he said he had a purpose and he was persistent. And he seemed to think that's all that Ford had, that he wasn't blessed with all these other attributes, or at least they weren't obvious. So I've come to the conclusion that the mind and thinking is a big part of the secret, but nothing great will be accomplished unless you have a very defined and powerful purpose. Chris?
Thanks, Russ. And you know, I love what Ted said. You know that he wants you to, you really need to read the book, study the materials, and come to your own conclusions. But the one thing that that kind of captured my imagination with this whole principle is that all the way throughout the book, as he discusses each of the principles, he references all the other ones. So, for example, I studied the chapter on persistence, the subject of persistence, more than any other because it was what I gave my presentation on, and it's just you know, I'm looking at one page here where it's talking about desire, and you know they all have so much to do with each other that I think once you read from front to back, once you've completed the study of this great work, you really begin to see how they all come together to create this overall concept and the overall work of what you need to do to think and grow rich. So I think to pin it down to one thing that is probably going to be different for each person, because the thing that I came away with is probably not the same thing that you came away with, and yet the theme throughout is this theme, this idea that all of these things work together, that they all aren't independent thoughts, but that they're all part of an overall philosophy, an overall way of how you do things. And like Napoleon said, he didn't meet anybody who didn't have all these qualities and who didn't exhibit all these traits and these character qualities. I think that has to do with the secret. It's all about taking it from front to back and having everything and having it all come together and culminate into one thought process and one way of doing business, one way of your life process and how you take information in and spit it back out as it relates to your business. So I think that it's just all of it all together and how it all relates and how each one has to do with each other. So you know what, we really only have a few minutes left, about 3 minutes left on this program, and I know some of you are just itching to discuss this and you've got some thoughts. So I'll go ahead and throw it open to everybody else, and who has something to say on this?
Let me say one thing. This is Eric. Let's think back to the metaphoric journey that Barnes took to Edison in the very beginning of the book. Okay, why did he get on the train? Because he wanted to be the assistant of the greatest inventor in the world. His definite purpose is what drove him and gave him the desire to get on that train in the first place. That train, to me, represents the journey that people go through life in order to get their riches that they want. His riches were not the money that he was going to get. It was actually that he respected that man and really wanted to work with him, and that was his definite purpose. And all this wealth came from that definite purpose. Same thing with Ford. I think there's one point in there when he says that he was talking about a specific type of engine, I think, and I don't know if it was mentioned in this literature or if it was another in Napoleon's books, but where he just said, hey, we're going to develop this engine, and I don't care what, all these experts are saying we can't do it. He goes, no, we're going to develop this engine. And he was stubborn about it. And that definite purpose made that engine appear because he kept pushing towards that definite purpose. That train ride would have never started had the purpose not sparked him to get on in the first place.
Well, also, though, also saying and enforcing what Chris was saying about the secret could be where you get all these things together, he had desire, but he had faith that if he went to New Jersey, he'd be able to accomplish something. He was listening to his own inner voice, auto-suggestion, specialized knowledge. He went to find out about it. Persistence. It was, 5 years before Edwin Barnes got an opportunity, but he had made a decision that he would not leave until he was partner of Edison. So all these things do work together, and I think that's an important point.
Well, they work together to form a programming language, as I said.
Yeah.
That's a great point. And, you know, we've got about a minute left. Anybody have any final comments?
The real closing comment here is don't just read this book. Study it, reread it, apply it, or it will not work.
That's right.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's a great way to end this. Guys, I appreciate your help on this project. It's been a great project. It's been a lot of fun. And thank you to the audience who's listening. I encourage you, like it's been said before, don't stop here if you haven't read the book. Read the book now, and then use our audio program as a study guide. These are our thoughts on what we feel about Napoleon Hill said, but they're only our thoughts. You can come to your own conclusions by reading the book yourself. Keep it on your desk and read a little bit every day. Maybe take one of the principles a day. But over time, these principles will all become a part of your thought process, and if you really take them to heart, and internalize them, think about how they can apply to you, and use all of these principles, then you too can think and grow rich. Thanks. I appreciate your time.